Well, good morning, and we welcome you to My Car Guru for a midweek edition. It is the Wednesday edition of My Car Guru. Good morning to Lenny Lawson.
I started on my ARC yesterday.
We've needed it lately, haven't we?
Yeah, I've got a hill on my property. I was just trying to find the highest ground that I could find, and I have plenty of wood, and so we've been processing wood. Mm-hmm. And we're using tongue and groove on ours. Tongue and
probably a good idea.
Joinery, yeah, so that we can join our boards. And then pitch. We're using pitch to seal it up. I have no idea what I'm talking about, but, you know, it is something to do with all this rain.
Instead of animals, like two by two, are you going to have two of every car?
Grandchildren.
Two grandchildren.
No, heck with the cars. Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I've got to preserve my Corvair, though. I've got a special place in the ARC for the Corvair.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I drove it to Powell's the other day. It's always a thrill to drive that car. Yeah, it's not particularly fast. It smells like burning oil all the time.
But it's neat.
It's a little squirrely.
It's red. I like it.
It's a little squirrely when it comes to driving.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to keep 25 pounds of pressure in the rear tires and 15 pounds in the front.
I understand.
Now, think about that. Mm-hmm. The average car right now has 35 pounds of pressure in the tires.
True.
So the Corvair has 15.
Mm-hmm.
Riding on massive 14-inch wheels.
Mm-hmm.
That's not massive. We sell cars with 22-inch wheels right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, driving around Powell's, and I get this quizzical look, you know, from the people. Say, yeah, I like a large tea with lemon and three sweetened low.
But they want to talk
make
about
that a senior tea.
Yeah, there you go. But they wanted to talk about the Corvair.
Yeah, no, well, he didn't. He just kind of looked at it. And then mm-hmm. I get around the other side, and this little girl stuck her head and said, "What's that? What kind of car is that?"
That's cool.
She said, "Is that a Corvette?" I said, "No, it's a Corvair."
She said, "What in the world is a Corvair?"
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, there are people who know and people who don't
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, generally, if you are, I don't know, what, 35 or younger, you probably don't know what a Corvair is very much.
No, but you know, the people who do know what it is have two trains of thought about that car.
Mm-hmm.
One, it was unsafe at any speed. Isn't that the car that Ralph Nader killed?
Ralph Nader, yeah.
Or they said, you know, my daddy had one of those. I love that car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just this, the people who don't understand and the people who do. But they are starting to go up in value.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for so long, I mean, I paid $2,500 for my Corvair 25 years ago. It's a 65 Corsa with 4-1 barrel carburetors. It's 140 horsepower, convertible. White top, red interior, 4-speed in the floor, which is the main reason I like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that car was the first year of the new body style. They had the original Corvair came out in 1960,
mm-hmm.
and it was a problem because it had swing axles and people didn't know how to drive it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one Ralph Nader had a big impact on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know what finished off the Corvair?
What finished off the Corvair?
The Mustang.
Yeah.
It was the coup de grace.
Mm-hmm.
For the Corvair.
And that was it.
But I still have one, and it brings smiles on people's faces.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance, the big car show, one of the probably the second biggest car show in this country, second only to Pebble Beach on the other coast.
Mm-hmm.
I am hoping to drive my 49 car hauler that I'm building right now mm-hmm. with the Corvair mounted securely on its spine and hauling it down to Amelia Island to drive around
mm-hmm.
joyfully with my brother mm-hmm. and other friends. The people who get to ride in the back seat are going to be rather uncomfortable because they have to avoid the fire extinguisher in the floorboard. Whenever you drive an old car, you should always have a fire extinguisher on board.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense, I guess.
Well, they kind of tend to catch fire occasionally. You know, little fuel leakage on a very hot engine,
mm-hmm.
not a good thing. You don't have to worry about that with modern fuel injection.
Right.
So anyway, we started this show off in a rambly fashion, which is not totally unusual.
I would say that's not very unusual for us.
Tim and I were talking during the in-between shows about this microchip shortage,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what exactly is a microchip or a microprocessor?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just like when on a lot of cars, when you turn your steering wheel, there is a microprocessor involved. Didn't used to be.
Yeah.
It used to be just a steering wheel connected to a steering shaft, connected to your steering box, and connected to your wheels through a bunch of rods and idler arms and stuff like that.
It was all mechanical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now it can change based on your speed. You know, your steering effort can change based on your speed. This actual steering inputs are measured by a microprocessor. Microprocessors are just little itty bitty. They used to be postage stamp size, but they've gotten much smaller than that. And you know, they take input information and store it, or they modify it based on the way they're programmed, and then they issue orders, basically, to different components on the car. When you turn on your air conditioning now, microprocessors are involved.
Mm-hmm.
Change a radio station. Even roll down your windows on the car. Used to, that was a direct connection to the fuse box, you know, and it was all mm-hmm. tied together to the electrical system on the car. Now it goes to a central processing unit
mm-hmm.
that makes a decision. You push the button and it says, oh, Lenny is wanting to lower his windows. Oh, he's pushing extra hard, so he must want this window to go all the way down so he can take his hand off the switch.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's just lightly pushing it, and he wants it to stop when he lets his finger off.
Mm-hmm.
These are all decisions that your car is making. Totally unnecessary. Right?
All from that CPU.
Yeah. And so you can imagine there's probably 150 CPUs on that F-150 I'm driving out here. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened with the Great Recession, not the Great Recession, the Great Pandemic. I was confusing it with the last disaster. The Great Pandemic, which has been a whole lot worse, was that, you know, we had a shifting of buying habits for people. And car manufacturers locked it down. They really slowed production. They started making masks. Remember when they were making
ventilators
and all that, because they stopped producing cars.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they stopped buying computer chips, microprocessors,
mm-hmm.
Because they basically, it's just-in-time delivery type of thing in an auto assembly plant. They don't build up big inventories. They don't have, like, it's not like Fort Knox for microprocessor chips, okay?
Yeah.
So they just have enough for current production needs.
So they're now trying to catch up, I guess.
Well, what happened was demand shifted from microprocessors for cars to microprocessors for electronics goodies. That people were at home, right?
Yeah.
And they were riding their Pelotons, for example,
mm-hmm.
right? They were getting on their Nautilus machines and getting
right.
fit. They were staying at home. They were watching TV. They were buying new TVs. They were buying new electronic devices, all kinds of stuff.
Having Zoom.
Video games. Yeah, Zoom meetings. All of this demand shifted, and then the people who were making the microprocessors says, well, let's just sell to them now. The auto industry isn't buying them. Let's just sell to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the auto industry starts cranking back up, and the microprocessor people say, well, wait a minute. You know, we don't have enough for you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to be able to make enough for you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what has created this crisis. And trust me, it is a crisis when it comes to the car business. And we'll talk about two of the major impacts that it's having on the car business right now.
That'll be coming up after the break. We are back. It's My Car Guru for Wednesday morning, talking microchips, not the kind you get out of a bag.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, way back in 1823, a baron by the name of Jean-Jacques Berzelay.
I thought you were going to say Jean-Jacques Jingleheimer Schmidt.
No.
But no.
Jean-Jacques Berzelay discovered silicon,
okay,
which today is the basic component of an integrated circuit or a computer chip.
Hence, Silicon Valley out in California, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1903, Nikola Tesla patents an electric logic circuit called gates and switches. 1947, three men were involved in inventing the first transistor at Bell Laboratories. 1956, those same guys were awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics for their work on transistors. 1958, the first integrated circuits were developed by a guy named Robert Noyce and Jack Kilby. 1960, IBM developed the first automatic mass production facility for transistors in New York. And then in 1971, the first commercially available microprocessor
mm-hmm.
came into being.
Mm-hmm.
So 1971... I was 14.
50 years ago.
And had big hair. I was listening to some 70s music
mm-hmm.
coming up here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness for 70s music. I think we can claim the best music.
Oh, no question. I always told my kids that, and they grew up listening to it. And now they like it. They're upper 20s into their 30s, and they like 70s music.
Thank goodness for the 70s channel
yes.
on my satellite
radio.
Yes.
So anyway, so we got to where we are, and it's having some major impacts on the industry right now. We have talked about this in weeks past. Today, yesterday, I tried to buy some cars online, and I couldn't because they were just too high. Hertz, and Enterprise had a bunch of cars going through the auction.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim, they were just so high. It's almost like almost the cost of a new vehicle
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, sometimes car dealers are slow to on the uptake, and you know you have to be able and willing to adapt to where the market is. Otherwise, you get left in the dust, and you have no product. And consumers are facing two headwinds right now when it comes to car purchases. One, the low supply of new vehicles due to the chip shortage, all right, is raising prices on cars because dealers do not have as much inventory. This is a nationwide problem. We've got dealers that are calling us to buy our inventory of remaining F-150s for window sticker price. These are other dealers. They're going to send a truck to Greenville, Tennessee, pick up these trucks, take them up to wherever they are,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to have not only window sticker MSRP in the car, but they're going to have to add transportation costs and all that, and then they're going to turn around and sell them and hopefully sell them for a profit.
Right.
But we're not going to let them have them, though.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We're not going to do it. Not going to do it. So we are, and so what's happening is that customers are seeing fewer and fewer discounts. Now, I'm just like you. I watch TV occasionally. I watched Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune the other day, and I saw 8 gazillion car dealer commercials, mm-hmm. and they're saying $15,000 off on a F-150 or get $8,000 more for your trade than it's worth. That may be partially true, given the way the market is right now. But these big discounts are a fiction right now because they're not out there. So that's one of the headwinds that consumers are facing. The other one is if they're wanting to buy a used car prices are way, way, way up, okay, and they're going up every month.
Mm-hmm.
But the good side of that, the other side of that coin, is the car that you're driving is worth considerably more now than it was 90 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Way more than it was 6 months ago. That's never happened in my 40 gazillion years in the car business. I've never seen used car values go up. You know, you have your seasonal things. You know, just like in the fall, four-wheel drives will start to get hot.
Right.
And they'll go up. In the spring, you'll see sports cars and stuff like that used to. You'll see them, you know, start to move up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But never like what I'm seeing right now. I was looking at a Chevy Silverado at the auction. It was a crew cab, Silverado, four-wheel drive, Z71, cloth seats. And I looked at the book value and see the computer program that we use tells us what to anticipate for next month's book value.
Mm-hmm.
That truck was going to increase in value between March and April, $3,500. $3,500.
What model did you say?
It was a 2018
okay.
Chevrolet Silverado crew cab four-wheel drive pickup truck. So if you own one of those, next month it's worth $3,000 more than it is today. Now, consumers don't know this. Because you know, if you go online, if you go to KBB or you go to Edmunds or you go to any of these, they lagged so much,
mm-hmm.
the market, that consumers are going to the dealership with their vehicle, they may be settling for too little for their trade-in, is what I'm saying.
So how can they find out the update?
Well, it's just not accessible to the average consumer, that information. I wish it was. Probably KBB, it will reflect that towards the end of next month,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe later. But really the only way to find out is to know somebody in the car business, know an insider.
Like a guru.
Like me. Yeah, you could use me. You know, before you go shopping, for sure, you need to know. You know, if you're, like, going out this weekend, you want to buy a Honda, and you've got a three-year-old Honda, it'd be nice to know what that Honda's worth, wouldn't it?
So your trade-in value would be, you know, enhanced that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you give me a call or send me a text, 423-552-2020, and then I'll give you a heads up on what you can expect to get for your trade.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing about me putting money out there is, if, you know, I'll write you a check for it. You know, if I tell you what your car's worth,
mm-hmm.
especially, I've got to see it first, obviously. I've got to walk around it, you know, do the smell check.
You mean you can't do it online like all these?
You know, really, you can't. You really don't know what it's worth until you actually walk around it. You know, there's just so many vehicles that have had damage of one kind or another, and it wasn't reported, turned into an agency. You know, Carfax and AutoCheck are not perfect. So you just have to you have to be prudent. You have to actually walk around the vehicle and look at it. You know, lots of vehicles have been just destroyed by their owners. I mean, let's just put it that way. Yeah. They spill everything in the inside. They never clean it up. They never get their car washed, you know. Or they're from up north, you know, and the vehicle has a lot of rust underneath. I've seen 2-year-old vehicles with rust coming through the body because it was just exposed, you know, to a lot of salt. And salt is a
corrosive.
It leads to corrosion. Yeah. It lets water get where it shouldn't and makes that metal turn bad. So anyway, it's important to recognize these facts and to go in with the information, because this is a negotiation business. This is not Walmart. Right?
Yeah.
It's not going in. You know, I think about other things. Is furniture a negotiation? If you go to Zach's and you make them an offer a little bit less than what they're asking, will they take it?
They might.
They might, yeah. I think to some degree, you know, maybe buying furniture, definitely buying farm equipment, tractors, stuff like that, definitely buying cars. You know, real estate is obviously a negotiation. A lot of people just don't feel comfortable with it.
Antiquing.
You know what? Why do you think, yeah, why do you think people don't feel comfortable negotiating? Why is that an uncomfortable thing to do? I have a theory.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just some people are uncomfortable with it, trying to ask for less for something.
But why?
You're afraid you're going to offend them, maybe?
Okay. Yeah, I think it is possibly that they just don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. They don't want to push. They don't want to exceed their authority.
They're just
it's
too
embarrassing.
Nice. Too nice, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they feel that negotiating is beneath them for some reason or other. But it's not.
No.
I mean, I remember buying a grill at Lowe's, and I went in there and I asked the sales associate, I said, you got it for $400. Is that the least you'll take?
Mm-hmm.
Is your manager here?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. You know, you're just like shocking the manager. Yeah. And he knocked off $50.
Yeah.
So if you don't ask, you won't receive, right?
Right. That's true.
So there you go.
All right, we're going to take one more break. We'll be right back to wrap things up. We welcome you back as we wrap up this Wednesday edition of My Car Guru with Lemmy Lawson.
I think you and I are talking about this negotiating thing. I think the only leverage you have are your feet.
That's it. If you don't like the way it's going, you can turn and walk away.
Now, there are certain skill sets involved in negotiation. We train our salespeople. Train. I always hated that word. So you train dogs. I guess you educate humans, right?
Yes. You've said
so
that before.
So we educate our salespeople on, you know, there's two sales that have to take place in any automobile transaction. There's the mental sale, and there's the financial sale. And many times when a customer comes in, all they want to know is, how much is it? Even when they don't know anything about it, they haven't driven it. You know, they haven't really, maybe some of them have done a lot of research and been out and they know everything, and they're just down to that point. But most people, the vast majority, need a little bit of education to make sure that they're making a wise decision. Because I have seen multiple cases of buyer's remorse, and I've tried to rescue customers out of those situations. And it's very hard.
Right.
It's less hard now because cars aren't depreciating right now. I was talking to a Porsche dealer the other day, and he said, Lenny, I sold a Porsche 911 to a guy, 2020 model last year. And we gave him, I think he only put 8,000 miles on it. We gave him exactly what he paid for it on a new Porsche. No depreciation.
After 8,000.
I said, has that ever happened? He says, no.
Yeah.
That has never happened.
Yeah.
But the mental sale is, do I need it? Do I want it? Does it meet my, does it check all the boxes? You know, does it have the features and benefits that I need in a car? And then the question is, I want to buy it. The next comes the financial commitment. How am I going to buy it? What am I going to pay for it? If somebody wants something bad enough, they'll build a scenario. They'll build a case for the financial decision, won't they?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's too much. I see it all the time.
Well, if I cut this out, maybe I can get it. You know.
Yeah, well, I'm going to save money on gas, and maybe my insurance isn't going to be as much.
Right,
and
right.
You know, I'll cut back on my big pals, you know, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that behavior never happens.
No.
It's like buying an exercise machine, you know, a Nautilus.
You end
bicycle.
You end up hanging clothes on it.
It becomes a clothes hanger. Very good analogy.
Yeah.
That's what mine is.
All right. Glad you hung in there with us today, but our time is up, and we'll talk to you on My Car Guru tomorrow.